Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
Law enforcement seeking to help identify now Barnes in that area of the country, in the Wichita area, and even out a little ways, because we're talking about with one of these Oklahoma that BTK could have actually used for some of his things that he does. We know he loves Barnes. Kathleen Ramsland got that out of him when she was working on his autobiography several years ago. A lot of those things that were written about with the Barnes and such seem to be more so part of his fantasy world, not necessarily things that he acted out upon, or so we thought. Law enforcement, like I said, now wanting to identify where these Barnes are, if they're standing or not, and what could have actually been done in them based on some of the drawings that Rader put out there that could very well be connected to some cold cases. Where do you think this is going to be going, and how many more chapters here in the BTK saga are we unaware of?
It's puzzling, isn't it? First thing that struck me is, wow, he's a really good drawer. I mean, so let's take a look at psychopaths for a second and serial killers. One of the main reasons they kill like they do is because it is sexual in nature, and they do fantasize about that aspect of it. And that's why a lot of times they'll position bodies the way they do and take trophies like they do, so they can relive that fantasy of what they were doing for their own sexual gratification. And so one way it looks, again, I'm armchair quarterbacking this, yep, is that he couldn't obviously take a photo of any of these things back then and turn it into a photo mat or Kodak for developing. So he actually drew it, yep, as part of his fantasy. Thankfully for us now, because hopefully they can use that, because I know law enforcement has been passing around to people to try to see if they could recognize any of these places, because I thought he did a decent job of articulating the visuals of what was going on in a terrific way. So I'm hoping that it can lead to more. Now, this goes to the question, though, that I've been reading, because I've told you about, you know, me doing research on these things.
Yeah,
I can't find any research that says why he would admit to some of the murders and not others of the murders, except it keeps going back to this sense of control. and that he likes the fact that he is notorious for being the BTK killer. But at the same time, since he's in jail and locked up for that, I think he does revel in the fact that, yeah, you got me for that, but there's a lot more you don't know about. And I think he's really reveling in that as well. That's the only thing I can think of, because there's no research on why they would hold on some of this stuff and not on others.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, because he has seemingly been cooperative with most law enforcement over the years. Again, we're dealing with a psychopathic individual who will lie about anything for their own needs and desires and such. But the fact that some of this really is coming in close to home, I am wondering if this is all part of a riddle, part of a game with him that he's trying to play before he's, out of this world, not being in the greatest health anymore. There's several trophy items that they're looking at in some of the photographs that he took of himself. One of the big questions asked, and I can easily dispel that, is how did they take the Polaroids? Was someone else there? No one else was there. He had a contraption attached to the Polaroid camera that made it take the picture. But these are very disturbing pictures where he's wearing the clothing of his victims. And one of them, it's called Three Projects, where they believe he was wearing three or more different trophy items of three different victims while he was having this sexual fantasy with the clothing on. I'm curious as to how much they're going to glean off this old evidence, because there's a lot there. There's a lot that's been sitting in evidence lockers. There's been his writings that have just been kind of sitting there. It seems that there's a treasure trove of other possible leads of what he was involved in. Why did it just sit there for 15 years? Or did everyone truly believe we got him on everything?
I think numerous things here. Like everything in life, there's never just one answer. I think, one, the sheriff in this is doing a great job.
Yeah.
So we got new evidence and he seems really diligent and thorough on things. He seems really experienced every time you see him talk and speak. So let's go to the one aspect of why now and not before. Well, if you have only a couple of investigators and a pile of murders you're looking at, going back and re-looking at someone that's already been convicted is not high on your priority list, unless something new arises and is shoved in front of your face. And as this is case right now, I think that's part of it. And so good for them for reigniting it now and doing due diligence on this. And another thing that popped in my mind when it came to him, again, because I'm not a licensed clinician, so I don't know these things, but I'm hypothesizing here, because he fantasizes, and these psychopathic serial killers do this so much, they fantasize these things. I really wonder I bet you there's a probability that he has a hard time discerning what he actually imagined in his brain and what actually he did in person in life, in reality. And so if those two things are muddled together, you don't necessarily know what to confess to, because it might have just been a memory that he thought he might have dreamed or had in one of those moments, where in reality he actually acted on it. So that might be part of it too. So also as he's getting older, his memory's faltering, because you would think that he would take a lot of pride in all those things like he did before. And so when you ask yourself, well, what would be the reason by him not doing that, besides the control of, hey, look, I got over on the cops, which to me wouldn't seem like it's a motivator, but not a massive one. The only other explanation was he didn't think he might have done those things. He might have thought he just imagined it.
That's an interesting thing to think about, especially as someone gets older in age and they start to deteriorate. I mean, someone who's not a serial killer certainly can have false memories or misconstrue places and times and things of what they did. So, yeah, I mean, that's interesting to think of, even if we did down to DNA evidence find that, yes, this definitely was him. Would he still continue to deny it simply because he doesn't have a recollection of doing it? And I would imagine with anything that you get a lot of reps in at, at some point, they kind of blur together a little bit when you're doing similar things to similar people. As horrible as that is, to be able to misconstrue and blur around ideas of murdering people, it's disturbing. But I would imagine if you're doing it regularly, you would get a little confused.
Yeah. And because when he had times and periods of his life when he wasn't going out being a serial killer, he was having to substitute those actual actions for the fantasies in his own mind. And so those things might get blurred over a period of time, I would think.
What's your thoughts on the Missouri case? The Garber one is very interesting because, number one, it goes off of his MO, the case here of Shauna Beth Garber. She was bound. It looks kind of like BTK, but she was also raped, which is different than anything that we've ever seen in the MO of BTK thus far. Not to say he couldn't have tried something different once, but it's different. Kerry Ross and his daughter seems to have a lot of confidence that this was the work of her dad, even saying to Banfield just the other night that she would have made an arrest last week, and even said that she has no faith in Lori Howard, the Missouri detective who is on the case right now.
Yeah, you know, and give, you know, give credit to the daughter being involved in doing it. And like you just said, you know, there's, you know, when you're developing your own MO like BTK was, are there moments when you're going to be experimenting to see whether you get the same psychological deviant pleasure from a new action? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you know, and then you're done doing it that way because you got nothing from it. So it's a possibility. I go back to, let's go where the evidence leads us on that one.
Yeah. Be very interesting to watch and see where that goes. So many, I mean, I think there's a level here of a lot of people feeling hope that they haven't had in such a long time of putting some of these cases together. So that's where sometimes, is that where we get into the false narratives and our confusion that comes about the confirmation biases, because we're so focused on finding the answer that sometimes we overlook some of the things that make us say, stop, this really isn't the right path to be on.
100%. You know, when we're trying so desperately, especially when we're emotionally attached to the outcome that we're seeking, we're only going to see things and even twist things in a way that going to confirm what it is we're seeking and hoping to find. And which is, I want to make sure that people understand that's okay in the sense that everyone does it. There's no shame in that. But when you're doing those types of things, that's why we have investigators and teams, because no one person can do those things on their own. You need what I call the loving critic in your life. You need the person who's objective, that says, that can listen to the things you're doing and watch and observe the way you're conducting that investigation to give you some mental clarity. Say, listen, you're thinking this, I don't see it. Or you're thinking this, and yeah, you're right on spot on that. That's why there's usually teams and multiple teams of people doing these checks and balance each other along the way, because as human beings, we're really fallible in this area. And that's okay, because that's why we set up teams the way we do, to do these investigations. But as individuals, you know, be careful, because if you set yourself up and we give these things called hope, we hope this will turn out the way that we can, you know, rest our laurels that it was him that conducted the murder of the loved one in my life, so I can bring some closure to my life. If it doesn't turn out that way, you're going to be re-devastated again. So just help yourself manage your expectations as people move down a path, explore that road, and keep communicating.
You're consuming the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.